Thank you for downloading this program from the BBC. This program is part of World War One on the BBC. For more information, go to bbc.co.uk/ww1.
Belfast woke this morning with a half expectation that the King would be deposed before the day was out.
The 10th of July. In Britain, all eyes are on Ulster. The Unionists of Northern Ireland have declared their own provisional government. They won't accept the plans for rule from Dublin. Their leader, Sir Edward Carson, arrives in Belfast with an armed guard of 400 men.
He looked each volunteer squarely in the face as he passed, and only once did the ghost of a smile flicker across his mouth when he saw a baby in its mother's arms playfully pulling at the barrel of a rifle sloped on the shoulder of a volunteer.
Despite the Unionist threats, the King is keeping his engagements. He's just across the Irish Sea touring Scotland, greeting the cheering crowds from an open carriage. But there is dissent here too. Suffragettes are lying in wait. A royal reporter is appalled.
While the King and Queen are passing through Dundee, one of the crazy malignants, conspicuous in a bright green dress, sprang forward from the crowd of cheering spectators and tried to throw a bundle of leaflets into the royal carriage. The papers fell short, and the woman rushed forward with an umbrella in her hand. The Queen was startled for a moment, and some imagined that the woman intended attacking the King. But before she could reach the carriage, she was seized by a royal footman and hurried away amid the angry cries of the crowd.
Is the Prime Minister running grave risks of a breakdown?
There is speculation in the press about Prime Minister Henry Asquith's health.
This week, the nervous twitching of the shoulders, the feverish rubbing of the knees with the palms of the hands, have become more marked than ever.
Now in his early 60s, he's been leading the Liberal government since 1908. The events in Ireland are taking a lot of his time, and since the end of March he has taken on the additional job of War Secretary. His private life, too, is in turmoil. He's fallen madly in love with the upper-class beauty Venetia Stanley, 35 years his junior. He writes to her almost daily.
Nothing can exceed the blackguardism of the press. But by misfortune or design, some people are always in the limelight. I'm thankful that you are not one of them.
Far away from London, the Serbian capital, Belgrade, is tense, waiting to see how Austria-Hungary will react to the assassination of its Archduke. A shocking incident adds to the tensions. Nicholas Hartwig, a highly influential pro-Serbian ambassador from Russia, pays a call on his Austrian counterpart, Vladimir Giesel.
In the course of the conversation, de Hartwig was suddenly taken ill and died. Giesel at once sent for Hartwig's daughter, Ludmilla. Her manner was cold and hostile, and she made a quick inspection of the room, rummaging about in some large Japanese vases and asking whether he had eaten anything at the Austrian embassy. Fortunately, he had not, and had only smoked some Russian cigarettes, which he had brought with him. Giesel gave Ludmilla the cigarettes, which she carefully put in her purse.
The Russian ambassador was overweight and in bad health, but rumors spread that he has been murdered. Russia already doesn't trust Austria-Hungary. This will not help.
Explore World War One on the BBC through our in-depth, interactive online content. Curated by experts and reporters including Ian McMillan, Kate Adie and Frank Gardner, each guide blends documentary, discussion and short films to take you through some of the key issues, from life in the trenches to poetry, propaganda and the role of women. To discover compelling new perspectives on the war that changed everything, go to bbc.co.uk/ww1.